Beginning in 3, 2, 1. For the first week of April 2004, this is the Rain Report. From This Week in Amateur Radio, I'm George Bowen, W2XBS. On March 23, 2004, the Wall Street Journal ran a feature story about ham radio and its opposition to BPL, broadband over power line technology. In this article, Ken Brown makes a number of assertions that angered many in the U.S. amateur radio service. One of those is Rich Moseson, W2VU, editor of CQ Magazine since 1999. Rich wrote a letter to Ken Brown that took him to task on a number of observations made in that story. Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, spoke with Rich about his response to that Wall Street Journal piece.
The article had to do with ham radio in relation to broadband over power lines, or BPL, and it's not the first article that the Journal has run on the topic of BPL. In fact, when they ran their first article several weeks ago, which sang the praises of BPL without discussing any of the possible drawbacks, such as interference to everybody who uses the HF spectrum and low VHF spectrum, the ARRL's Dave Sumner wrote an excellent letter providing that perspective that was published in the Journal. Kind of as a follow-up, I guess, this article appeared with a reporter going along for a ride with a ham who happens to be an ARRL employee through a BPL test area and listening to the interference that it caused. Well, the whole tone and tenor of the article basically was that we are a shrinking group of whining old men who are standing in the way of progress. Many people responded immediately to some of what was said in there and to the specifics of the interference question. I was talking this over with our publisher, Dick Ross, K2MGA, and he pointed out that nobody had challenged the basic assumptions in the article, which we knew not to be true. First of all, that ham radio is shrinking and that the people are just getting older and older. So I went through trying to come up with a response that would go after some of those inaccuracies, and it turned out to be a very long letter. Since there had also been discussion of this article on the ARRL's public relations internet reflector, of which I'm a member, I posted a copy to the reflector when I sent it in to the Wall Street Journal. And apparently it's taken on a life of its own, as it's been relayed to other reflectors in other places, and I've gotten like 50 letters from different people about it, all favorable. It's interesting how people have responded. But you know, a lot of the misinformation that's in this article is very typical of what a lot of hams believe themselves about where the hobby is today and where it's heading. And that's one of the reasons that I felt it was important to set the record straight, not only for the people who read the Wall Street Journal, but for hams out there too. You know, he referred to the nation's vocal but shrinking population of ham radio operators. Well, we're certainly vocal, but we're not shrinking. In fact, the number of licensed hams in the U.S. is very close to its all-time high. We hit a peak last summer at more than 685,000. Currently, the number is around 684,000, but you are going to always have fluctuations over a several-month period. But if you look back 5 years ago, there were 673,000 licensed hams. And in 1980, there were 382,000. So far from shrinking, amateur radio is growing in this country, and in the past 25 years, it's nearly doubled its ranks. The author wrote about a clash between the dots and dashes of the telegraph and the bits and bytes of the web, which I said in the letter makes for nice copy, but it doesn't paint a very accurate picture, because while certainly many hams still enjoy Morse code, and it has many advantages, like getting through when other modes don't, we're not all sitting there with hand keys using a technology that was born 100 years ago. In addition to Morse code, where obviously most of us use voice, we use computers, we do television, and I wanted to set the record straight on that. He also said, not too many decades ago, ham radio operators were on the cutting edge of communications technology. They spread word of disasters that might otherwise have taken days to reach the public. I agreed with him. It wasn't too many decades ago. The correct number of decades ago is zero, and I mentioned that there's a permanent ham station at the National Hurricane Center that's staffed whenever there's a hurricane near land, because hurricanes still knock out normal communications, and when they do, the only way to get through is still ham radio. And of course, in the immediate aftermath of the attacks of 9/11, ham radio was called into service to help various emergency agencies in New York City communicate with each other because their high-tech office of emergency management had unfortunately been destroyed. He also said to become a fully licensed ham operator, people still need to learn Morse code. I don't know what he means by fully licensed. I've always considered technicians to be fully licensed, and they haven't needed to learn Morse code for over 10 years now. Of course, there are some people out there who don't think you're fully licensed till you've learned Morse code, but that's not the way the FCC sees it. He talks about aging hams. They're dying. My response was, yep, along with aging non-hams. Not much we can do about that. You know, it's a fascinating thing. There are two factors in the age numbers that make them not add up. First of all, we don't really know what the ages are now, because in the past 10 years or so, the FCC hasn't been able to collect and release birth date data because of privacy rules. So we don't really know what the ages are. And secondly, we do know, because anybody who's been to a test session will tell you, that a lot of the people who are coming into ham radio for the first time today are in their 50s and 60s. They are people who have perhaps been interested in it for many years and finally have the time to devote to it, or they may have just discovered it and want to get involved with it. But with today's advances in healthcare, these people who come into ham radio at 55, 60, 65 often have 20, 25, 30 years that they can give the hobby and be major contributors. And they have time available to go places and staff emergency operating centers and provide public service and things like that. These people are assets to our hobby. They're not liabilities. And they certainly were painted that way.
The author of the article, named Ken Brown, cites that there are only 250,000 active ham operators. What does active mean?
It's a very good question, and I don't have a good answer, because the definition of active varies from person to person. If you're a ham and you think you're active, then you are. It's very hard to define active. Does it mean that you're on the air every day? Does it mean that you're on the air once a week, once a month? Are you active if you only talk to random people by calling CQ? Or are you active if you get on once a week and talk to a group of friends of yours? Or even if you just use ham radio to talk to your spouse on your way to or from work? What constitutes being active? It's a very difficult thing to define. Here's the quote says, "The American Radio Relay League has seen its membership shrink to today's 160,000 from a peak of 175,000 in 1995, and the average member is in his mid-50s. The group estimates that there are about 250,000 active ham radio enthusiasts."
You're in the middle of a Rain Report interview with CQ Magazine editor Rich Moseson, W2VU, about his response to the March 23, 2004 Wall Street Journal story about ham radio's opposition to broadband over power lines, or BPL. Hap Holly will continue his conversation with Moseson in a moment. This is the Rain Report.
You're listening to RainReport.com, the only authorized internet source for Rain audio.
Well, where is the league getting its figures, and how is it defining active?
Got me. I wouldn't dispute the figure too much. We know that there are far fewer active hams by any definition than licensees. That's probably a pretty accurate figure. But that means that there are a lot of other people out there who are still holding on to licenses and consider it important. And I run into hams at every ham fest I go to who tell me they're just getting back on the air after being off for 20, 30 years. This is probably one of the biggest trends in the hobby today, is people who are licensed and have been inactive for years and years coming back on. They've maintained their licenses, so all they need to do is go out and get a piece of gear or fire up the old gear, get back on the air. Some of them have let their licenses lapse, and they're coming back and getting new licenses again. It's the biggest trend that I'm seeing today in correspondence that I get, in the ham fest that I go to. I'm constantly hearing from people who are just getting back active again after many, many years being off the air. So just because you don't happen to be active right now doesn't mean you won't be again. But we have a great story in our April issue of CQ from a ham who has been inactive for 46 years until three friends of his who got licensed around the same time as he did decided it was time to get him back on the air. They started out by sending him QSL cards, and he kept going, no, 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 and did anyway. and he's now back on and very active in his mind. To him, active means he gets on every week and talks to his friends. That sounds active to me. I don't know if everyone else would call that active, you know, if you're not going out and DXing or contesting or fox hunting or whatever. I certainly would call it active. I don't know if everyone else would.
The FCC's database shows 685,000 licensed hams today. That database is always going to be inaccurate because of the attrition rate. A haul sign will remain in that database 10 with the grace period up to 12 years. So I'm not so sure who has an accurate number of how many hams there are or whoever will because of that.
Obviously, the number is always going to be changing, and it will never be 100% accurate because you have new people coming in and people dropping out or passing away all the time. It's a dynamic hobby, and people come and people go. Obviously, the worst-case scenario for being stuck on the database is someone who may become a silent key the day after his license is renewed, and his family doesn't send the license back for cancellation. He may stay on the database for 12 years until he doesn't renew, goes through the grace period, and is finally dropped after 12 years. But that's highly unlikely to happen in more than just a couple of cases. But even so, if you look back at the numbers between 1980, when there were 382,000 hams on the rolls, and okay, that was a five-year license term, so they would only be on there for 7 years if they died the day after their license was issued instead of 12. But if you look back, 382,000 versus 685,000, you still have a huge increase in overall numbers. You don't have 300,000 dead hams on the rolls here. Maybe you have 30,000, but it's probably more like 3,000 people who have passed away and whose families haven't notified the FCC. You're talking a tenth of 1%. I don't really think it's a significant number and a significant issue.
Were there any other issues in the article that you did respond to?
Well, I had 10 altogether, and his suggestion that we were no longer on the cutting edge of technology. I asked him how many other hobbyist groups have their own fleet of communication satellites that they've built by themselves. Hams around the world have built and launched roughly 60 satellites since 1961, when we launched the first non-government satellite that was ever put into orbit. That was Oscar 1. And that we're still pushing the limits today. We're extending the distance limits on high microwave frequencies, 241 gigahertz. And this is the next frontier for wireless communications. The FCC is talking about band allocations between 300 and 3,000 gigahertz. And believe me, the propagation information that's being developed by the hams who are doing this activity at 241 gigahertz is going to work its way into the overall knowledge database that will be used by the FCC in determining how those frequencies get used. You know, if you look around at the hot ticket items in personal communications today, you have wireless computing networks. Well, we invented that 25 years ago. It was called packet radio. You have text messaging and still image transmission by cell phone. APRS does text messaging a little one line at a time, and there's a couple of radios out there that will send pictures, and they've been on the market for 5, 6, 7 years. So these are technologies that are just exploding in the consumer marketplace today. We've been playing around with for at least 5 years, and in some cases 25 years, and I pointed that out to him. Oh yeah, he mentioned that hams, quote, haunt a series of shortwave radio frequencies set aside for them by the federal government in the 1930s. Again, giving the image that we're this stodgy old group of people who have gone nowhere since the 1930s. I pointed out, first of all, that those frequencies were allocated internationally, not just by the federal government, but they're not reflective of everything we have today. We've got several new bands in the 1980s, and we just got a new one last year, so we're not stuck back in the 1930s. Another point that he made was, quote, one favorite game, trying to contact someone in each of the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S. Well, CQ sponsors the USA Counties Award, so we're very happy that people like to do that. But there's a value to it beyond it being a fun exercise for a piece of wallpaper. A lot of counties in the U.S. do not have large resident amateur populations, so a lot of people will drive there and put them on the air from their mobile radios. Well, mobile radio sitting out on a road someplace is not going to have the same kind of signal strength as a home station with a beam antenna, and an amplifier that gives people on the other end some experience in digging out information from a weak signal. A weak signal that I pointed out in the letter is likely to be obliterated by BPL. And on the flip side of driving to these counties is the question of emergency preparedness. If something happens that amateur radio communication from those places is required, these hams who have been there know the places where they can get signals out of. They wouldn't have to go searching to find a location where you can set up an antenna and get a signal out. So they can provide a valuable service where minutes count in being able to provide information on these are good radio locations, and these are things that have to be considered.
This has been part one of a conversation Hap Holly, KC9RP, had with CQ Magazine editor Rich Moseson, W2VU, concerning a March 23, 2004 Wall Street Journal article about ham radio's opposition to broadband over power line, or BPL, technology. Next time, Moseson will detail the pitfalls of BPL. You'll want to be around for that. That's next week, here on the Rain Report. Copyright 2004. Rain. All rights are reserved. From This Week in Amateur Radio, I'm George Bowen, W2XBS, for Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network.